Blog Talk Radio.
Baruch Hashem, this is Mark Lichtenwalter, your host for Fundamentally Mormon. I am the Mormon Fundamentalist. The guest call-in line is 917-889-8827. That's 917-889-8827. We are going to be finishing off this pamphlet about the New Testament and plural marriage tonight. So this is episode 31 of the Fundamentally Mormon podcast program. And the New Testament and Plural Marriage by Ogden Kraut, Part 2. I'll just start with the reading, and then Kim, my wife, my co-host, is also going to be reading as well. In fact, Kim, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. She muted herself so that the daughter doesn't, keep on talking all through the radio program. But anyway, so before we get into that, I've been driving up in the mountains. I'm sitting at a pullout just by Schofield Dam up in Carbon County, Utah, about 7,500 feet elevation here. It's pretty nice out tonight, but I haven't been able to talk to my wife since earlier today. How are the horses, Kim?
They're doing really good. So she cantered on her own tonight, and she was trotting for a while, and she's doing really good.
Oh, but she didn't get thrown off, and the horse didn't run into a dead sprint. So that's good, right?
Yeah, well, she did, the horse, Hannah, did trip a couple of times, but she did okay and, gathered everything up. Lydia didn't panic or anything. And then it was pretty cool, actually, because we took her to an arena. So we went for a walk away from where she normally is. And then we took her to an arena. And there was one other rider. I didn't ride tonight. I could have. I was just tired. So our friend rode with her in the arena. And when we first took Hannah in there and, Lydia got up on her, she kind of was getting all... Henri, and she was a little bit jumpy, and she tried to run out. Yeah, Hannah was. And Hannah tried to run out of the arena, but Lydia, she controlled her. She held her reins. She was dancing, sidestepping, dancing around and stuff, and Lydia got her, held her reins, and then she started running over towards the other horse, Cherokee, that's the name. And, she ran over there, but she got her under control, so that was good, all by herself, which is a big deal for her.
Yeah, our daughter has been riding horses for about, 2 weeks now?
Oh, no, it's been like a month, but just off and on, not consistently.
Yeah, mm-hmm. my co-driver has horses and the farm and all that, so... we're friends with him, so he needs to walk the horses and exercise the horses. So my daughter volunteered, mm-hmm. and my wife goes over there too when they ride horses. And it's kind of funny because I was raised around ranchers and horses, and I've thrown hay, I've fixed fences, I've branded, I've dehorned cattle, castrated cattle, all kinds of farmer stuff. But I've never been on a horse. I prefer a four-wheeler because horses have a mind of their own. But not really. I mean, I just never had a desire to get on a horse. I'd rather walk. But
it's funny that you say that because he was asking why you didn't come over and ride.
Because he told you to get my lazy butt out of bed and go drive the truck.
Yep.
So, I mean, what am I supposed to do? He gives me the truck back and I go driving.
He asked if you wanted to. He asked if you would ever get up on a horse. I said, I don't think that's his thing.
Not really. I was telling him the other day the only two hobbies I have really are driving a truck and gospel-oriented stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So... Anyway, I guess I'll let you start the reading because you get through it quicker than I do, and they'll just keep on commenting on every other line.
Me, but Yeah, if it's just me, then I get through it quickly, but with all your commentary, it takes a while.
Yeah, well, it happens. Anyway, I'll mute myself, and then if I unmute myself, and you hear it when I unmute myself, right?
Yeah, and then I just have to get to the end of the paragraph when you do that.
Okay. Yeah, and then I can comment or whatever. All right, well, I'll mute myself, and you take off with it. Thank you.
Okay, so starting where we left off, I think in the last session, it says, in Paul's sermons on fleshly sins, such as in Romans 7, Galatians 5, and many other epistles, he never mentioned that a man in plural marriage was living in sin. Why not? He defends monogamous marriage, and rightly so, but why did he avoid either a positive or negative comment on the subject of polygamy? The Jews practiced it. The Arabs practiced it. The Old Testament prophets and patriarchs practiced it, yet it is not even slightly referred to by Paul or any of the other disciples. In fact, in all of Christ's teachings about both sins and virtues of the flesh, even he did not mention it. Isn't it strange that nothing was said about it? Certainly some references must have been made. If plural marriage was as terrible as most people suppose, then the Lord would surely have given us more reputable evidence to rely on than these few isolated verses in 1 Corinthians. Why do we wrangle over the positive statements on monogamy, which are commendable, but fail to find one simple New Testament reference about plural marriage? If it is a sin, why didn't they say so? If it is a virtue, why didn't they admit it? The Old Testament is full of examples of prophets, patriarchs, kings, and righteous men who lived plural marriage, and not one disciple of Jesus Christ said a word against them for such a lifestyle. Undoubtedly, Christ's apostles had something clear and definite to say on the subject. Have some of those epistles been lost, or is it possible that in the New Testament translators purposefully omitted those references because of their own personal bias? It is obvious that either one or both of these situations have occurred. Because of the scarcity of information on marriage and especially plural marriage in the New Testament, some have supposed that Paul did not marry. However, the early Christian fathers did not record it that way. Clement of Alexandria, born about 150 AD, one of the noted historians of early Christianity, wrote in his work, The Stromata, that Paul does not hesitate in an epistle to address his wife. Philippians 4:3 and 1 Corinthians 9:5 and also 13, whom he did not take about with him that he might facilitate his ministry. As quoted by Eusebius in Ecclesiastical History, BK 3, chapter 30.
So, I was just going to say something about that.
Mm-hmm.
So, these early writers, before Constantine got a hold of everything, they did mention things about Paul and Peter and those guys being married. What happened when Constantine got a hold of everything is he basically hijacked the church, as I've talked about before in the program. And over time, the first 200 to 400 years after our Messiah was crucified and resurrected, the earliest codexes and manuscripts of the Brit Hadashar, the New Testament, are actually different than what we have now. There are things in them that were added 200 to 400 years, and even after that, after Yeshua, our Messiah, died. And, you know, everything goes through the lens of the Catholic faith or church. Since they hijacked it, and since they did things like make Torah observance illegal, and even Shabbat, proper seventh-day Sabbath from the Jewish Sabbath, which was never changed anywhere in Scripture, from Friday night to Saturday night, sundown to sundown, they actually the Catholics actually made it illegal in Rome, or the Catholic Empire made it illegal to observe Shabbat. They made a law, an anti-idol law, so you couldn't be idle on the Sabbath. You had to work. And if you were caught observing Jehovah's proper Sabbath, you could be put to death, thrown to the lions, put in the circus, made into a Roman candle to light the streets of Rome, or a whole number of other things. Basically, the Roman Empire hijacked Messianic Christianity, you know, and like even in the New Testament that we have, we can see Paul observing the sacrifices of the Nazarite vow and proving to the church that he was not some usurper, and actually paying for like five or six other men to observe the Nazarite vow complete with the sacrifices at the temple. He continued to, they all did, they all continued to observe Shabbat, proper Sabbath, and they went to synagogue on the proper Saturday Sabbath. And then what Gentiles don't understand is at the end of Shabbat, Saturday night at sundown is the new day, according to the Jewish reckoning of things. And they would get together on Saturday night and, you know, gather as followers of Yeshua, the Messiah, who are later called Christians. But, you know, they continued to observe the Moedim, the holy convocations of Jehovah, the feasts and the festivals, Passover or Pesach, and Sukkot, and, you know, Shavuot, and all of these holy days that were originally hijacked and replaced with pagan holidays. And but the problem with this is they wanted to get rid of everything Jewish about Jesus. They got rid of polygamy, even though it's expressly spoken of by Jehovah. There are certain circumstances where you have to take a second wife, and maybe even a third. Like, say you've got two brothers, and they're both married to their women, their wives, and both of them dying, you're the only brother left. Well, according to Torah, according to the law of Jehovah, which was not done away, Jesus said, not one jot nor tittle will be done away until all things are fulfilled, until the heaven and the earth pass. Then you've got the responsibility not only to take those two widows, those two sister-in-laws, as a wife, but to provide for them and also to give them children. And their firstborn male children carry on the name of the deceased husband or the deceased brother. These were requirements in Torah. And they're still, they have never been done away with. And, but it was the Roman Empire that wanted to get rid of everything Jewish about Yeshua, you know, call him something else, Jesus, Christo, you know, Yeshua is his name. His name is not Jesus or Jesus or any of those other things. He may answer to those names because he forgives the ignorance of the Christian, but his true name was Yeshua, and he was a Jewish Messiah who observed Torah perfectly. Anyway, so that's why there's no mention of plural marriage. But there are. You just have to know where to look and how to read it according to a Hebrew mindset, not a Gentile mindset. Anyway, I'll give it back to you, Kim.
Okay. If we can find so little about even the monogamous marriages in the lives of the apostles and saints, is it not evident that even more, or much more, must be lacking about plural marriage in ecclesiastical history or text? We know that many nations and people of the world were practicing plural marriage at the time of Christ, so why wasn't more said about it? In fact, this is me, not the book thing, but in fact, in history, if anybody did any research at all, in any amount of history, you would see that it actually is relatively new to the world to live monogamous or in monogamous relationships, because the more times in history, it was common to live plural marriage. Anyways,
well that
we actually, oh,
and
sorry.
Well that and okay, the Western world lives monogamy because they get their values from pagan Rome, but if you go outside of that world, the Orient, the Arabs, all over the world, they live polygamy. In fact, they live polygamy, and some people like the Mongolians live polyandry, you know, multiple husbands to one wife, you know, but just because we have this pagan mindset given to us by Catholic Rome, you know, pagan Catholic Rome, we think monogamy is the end all be all, but really, you know, in our society, it's not. Like, you've got serial monogamy. Majority of the masses, you know, they get tired of each other and they head off and are single and then married to somebody else and single and married to somebody else, you know, and that's kind of the world we live in. But outside of our Western culture, which is influenced by pagan Rome, you actually have more polygamous, multiple wives to one husband. And if a wife can choose a husband who can take care of her over some schmuck, then good on her, you know. Anyway, go ahead, Kim.
We actually have very scanty and incomplete records on the personal lives of Christ and his apostles. Most followers of biblical history are dismayed and frustrated at the loss of records and texts from existing manuscripts. Many early Christian fathers noted these textual omissions and aberrations and made an effort to unscramble a multitude of those problems. Augustine attempted to justify them. Neander gave up trying to correct them, and Origen wrote a whole book trying to rectify them. Nephi, one of the Book of Mormon prophets, despaired over the loss of so many important records. The Lord revealed to him the critical nature and consequences that would result from the loss of plain and precious texts that he had deliberately been removed from sacred scriptures. He wrote in 1 Nephi 13:26, 28, and 29, quote, "And after they go forth by the hand of the 12 apostles of the Lamb from the Jews unto the Gentiles, thou seest the formation of a great and abominable church, which is most abominable above all other churches. For behold, they have taken away from the gospel of the Lamb many parts which are plain and most precious, and also many covenants of the Lord have they taken away. Wherefore, thou seest that after the book hath gone forth through the hands of the great and abominable church, that there are many plain and precious things taken away from the book. And after these plain and precious things were taken away, it goeth forth unto all the nations of the Gentiles. And after it goeth forth unto all the nations of the Gentiles, yea, even across the many waters which thou hast seen with the Gentiles which have gone forth out of captivity, thou seest because of the many plain and precious things which have been taken out of the Book of Mormon, which were plain unto the understanding of the children of men, according to the plainness which is in the Lamb of God, because of these things which are taken away out of the gospel of the Lamb, and exceedingly great many do stumble, yea, insomuch that Satan hath great power over them," end quote. If we attempt to say that something is missing from the Bible, immediately there is a cry of blasphemy. How could such a thing happen? However, scholars admit that this has been the case. They have introduced statements from the Bible itself to prove that some of the books are missing, i.e., Genesis 5:1, the book of the generations of Adam, Exodus 24:7, the book of the covenant, 32:15-19, tables of testimony written on both sides, 32 and 33, the book which the Lord hath written, Numbers 21:14, book of the wars of the Lord, Joshua 10:18, written in the book of Jasher, also 2 Samuel 1:18, and 1 Samuel 10:25, the book in which the manner of the kingdom was written, 1 Kings 4:32-33, books containing 3,000 proverbs, 1,005 songs, a treatise on natural history and botany, written by Solomon, 1141, Book of the Acts of Solomon, 1419, Book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel, 1 Chronicles 29:29, the Book of Samuel the seer, of Nathan the prophet, and of Gad the seer, 2 Chronicles 9:29, the Book of Nathan the prophet, the prophecy of Ahijah the Silonite, and the visions of Iddo the seer, 12:15, Book of Shemaiah the prophet, and of Iddo the seer concerning genealogies, 18:22, the story of the prophet Iddo, the 20:34, the book of Jehu the son of Hanani, 24:27, the story of the book of the kings, 26:22, the acts of Uzziah written by Isaiah son of Amos, 26, Book of the Kings of Judah and Israel. That's also mentioned in 35:27 and chapter 36, verse 8. Chapter 33:18-19, the life of Manasseh, the words of the seers that spoke to him in the books of the kings of Israel. Jeremiah 36:2, the words which Jeremiah wrote against Israel and Judah and all the nations in the roll of a book. 36:13, the roll in which Baruch the scribe wrote. Daniel 22:4, the book that was sealed to the time of the end. What is it, Habakkuk 2:2, the vision that was made plain on tables. Malachi 3:16, the book of remembrance that was written for those that feared the Lord. Luke 1:1, many wrote concerning the faith of the elderly saints. 1 Corinthians 5:9, a third epistle to the Corinthians, we have only two. Philippians 4:3, the book of life. Revelation 13:8 and chapter 20:12 also talks of the book of life. All right, 4:16, read the epistle from Laodicea, 2 Timothy 4:13, 13 books and parchments left at Troas. Jude 3, a second epistle of Jude, we have but one, 3:14, the prophecy of Enoch, Revelations 1:11, the book sent to the seven churches of Asia, 5:1, a book sealed with seven seals, 10:2, little book which is a mighty angel had in his hand, 20:12, the books out of which the dead will be judged. Well, that was a lot of other, you can tell there's a ton of them in there.
It's ridiculous the amount that there is. Like, there's way more than that we don't have. I mean, you know, it says that we should have more books in the last days. But, you know, whenever somebody gets a hold of a seer stone and God gives them translations, everybody flips out. Oh, they can't do that. They're not, you know, you have to be somebody to. Joseph Smith was a nobody when God called him. So was Amos. So was Isaiah and Jeremiahu and. You know, all these prophets were nobody in the eyes. I mean, Yochanan the Immerser, John the Baptist, they were nobodies. Well, God uses nobodies to do his work. So, anyway, well, I was just thinking about the testimony of Aria, the wife of one of the plural wives of Yeshua. You know, that book. That's one of my favorite books. It's been a while.
I don't remember all. Yeah, it's been a while. I know of it.
Yeah. Anyway, but and even in the Dead Sea Scrolls, there are so many books that were found with the Dead Sea Scrolls that are histories and records and like visions of prophets and just amazing stuff, and like certain individuals don't want that work to get out there, so they hide them up, you know, and some of them have been leaked, which is awesome. When you get a hold of them, they're just, I love them, but you know, the devil doesn't want God's prophets to be heard, so he just covers them up, and they make all kinds of excuses about how, oh, that's Gnostic, we don't like that. And like, Gnostic means wisdom. You don't like wisdom from God, you know. And anyway, I know I need to get off my soapbox, but we're all supposed to be prophets and get revelation for ourselves. And if we come across these extra canonical texts, you know, and there's truth in them, I mean, even Joseph Smith received a revelation from Yeshua, Jesus, about these extra biblical texts, and Jesus said that there was many good things in them, and not to worry about translating them, that the people had to have the spirit to discern them, you know. So God leaves those out there for people to take a hold of and to look at, you know. And they're, some of them are really strange, like the Book of Enoch. That is a weird book. But God put it out there. Joseph Smith actually translated the Book of Enoch. And then there was the Book of Enoch found in the Dead Sea Scrolls, like the African Somalian, I think, Book of Enoch had some interesting things in it that didn't quite go along with Joseph Smith's version. Joseph Smith's version that he received by the seer stones was not exactly matching up with what the Africans had. But, you know, it's interesting, in 1948 and 1949 to 1956, they found all these Dead Sea Scrolls, and they found the Book of Enoch, which actually matches with Joseph Smith's translation. Isn't that interesting? You know, but anyway, I'm going to put myself back in mute or I'll go crazy. Love you.
Okay. One can only wonder how many of these books would have provided additional information on the law of plural marriage, and how many other books have been lost or discarded because they did say something positive about plural marriage. Besides all the lost books mentioned in the Bible, there are still many books that are included in some Bibles, but not in others. For instance, there are 15 books between the Old and New Testaments, covering about 400 years of ecclesiastical writings, that are treasured by the Catholics and included in their Bible as worthy scripture. The Church of England includes portions of them in their lectionary, but most of the Protestants have discarded them. This is all a matter of record, so it is easy to understand how many inclusions and deletions have occurred with original manuscripts. It says, this is another quote, I believe, in Harrison's Bible Criticism, pages 138 through 39. Much of the difficulty stems from the work of the earliest Christian copyists. In a time when the majority of people were illiterate and when Christianity periodically underwent severe persecution, there were probably few professionally trained scribes in the service of the church. Moreover, seldom were the scribes possessed by the spirit of the scribes of later times who worked according to the instructions of the Lord given in Deuteronomy 12:32. I'm not done with this quote, but I know you want to say something.
Well, I was just going to say, we're about to go into overdrive, which means the live portion of the radio show is about to come to an end. In order to listen to the rest, you have to call in to the guest call-in number, which is, there it is. It's 917-889-8827. That's 917-889-8827, or you can listen to it on, you know, the website later in its full entirety. If you are listening and you do not want to be on the program, that's fine. They will not choose you. I figured out that if you push 1 when you call into the studio, it puts a little question mark on the studio next to your name, and then I will know that you want me to unmute you so you can say something. But if I don't see that, I'm not going to bring you on, even if you are somebody who we know that likes to call into the show all the time, who I bring up from time to time. Anyway, it's 10 seconds left. 917-889-8827. Go ahead, Kim.
thou shalt not add thereto, nor diminish therefrom. In fact, the opposite seems to have been true of the scribes. In the first two centuries, they introduced thousands of changes into the text. To be sure, the majority of their errors were unintentional and are easily discernible. They're easily discernible slips of the eye, ear, or mind. Hundreds of changes in the text were, however, made intentionally. Yet, we should not think of these scribes as having acted from evil motives. If they often took many liberties in copying their texts, apparently, they did so in most cases in an attempt to help out. They were more interested in making the message of the sacred text clear than in transmitting errorless MSS. Thus, early scribes, and sometimes later ones, often smoothed out the Greek of the Bible writer or biblical writer by adding conjunctions, changing tenses of verbs, and changing word order. They also tended to clarify ambiguous passages by adding nouns or pronouns, by substituting common synonyms for uncommon words, and sometimes even by rewriting difficult phrases. There are also some instances, and these are usually very important ones, where scribes have added or less often subtracted whole sentences or narratives in the interest of doctrine or completeness. Harrison's Bible Criticism, pages 138-39. How many other letters, sermons, and epistles did the apostles record that said some plural marriage? In all the years of their ministry, did they make note of only one or two? We know that Jesus said and performed much more than just what is written in the New Testament. See John 21:25. The answer to the pastor seems to be clear. Many historians and scribes in ancient times, like those in modern times, generally balked at plural marriage and usually took measures to avoid, prevent, or oppose it. If it is a correct principle and sanctioned by the Lord and his prophets and we reject it, then we are condemned. If we choose to believe it is sanctioned by the Lord, there is plenty of historical evidence in Scripture to support it, and blessings will follow obedience to correct principles. On the other hand, if we choose to reject it, the Lord has allowed, although alternate windows, so men can feel justified in that position, using Scriptures as proof against it. However, it requires much juggling, twisting, and personal interpretation. This is an interesting aspect of Scriptures. They are broad enough to give everyone a chance to believe what they want. 1,000 different Christian religions are proof of that. Thank you for sharing this with me and for giving me the opportunity to respond. Best wishes, Ogden Kraut. So the next part is the joke book that you did not want to read.
No, thank you. They're so silly. Anybody can read that. If you want to go to OgdenKraut.com and look at the second set of pamphlets, you can find that all by yourself and read it till your heart's delight, whatever. But what's the next one after that? Because that's the one that we're going to be going to next.
It is going to be... Let me get to it because I have to get past all the jokes. So it is... The Old Ship Zion by Ogden Kraut.
And that's not that long of a... That's a pretty short pamphlet, isn't it?
It looks,
I think I've read that in pamphlet form. It's pretty... I don't think it's that long.
Yeah, it's just a couple of pages, not even...
Yeah, we should be able to get through that in tomorrow's show, no problem. Well, it looks like we're the only
did
two
you know,
on there again.
Did you know why Santa Claus only used 7 reindeer this year?
Because that's the holy number of God.
No, because he left Comet home to clean the sink. Haha. That's one of those jokes in that thing. That's how corny the jokes are.
So, how many reindeer... Do Santa Claus have old Saint Nick? I mean the devil in red. I mean whatever. Rabbi Hanukkah Claus is gonna beat up Santa Claus because Santa Claus is an evil pagan. Whatever. I get all lit up around Christmas. around my Christian and Mormon friends because we don't do Satan Claus in our home, but we do Hanukkah, and which is my own invention. But we do Hanukkah, the Festival of Lights, because guess what? Yeshua, Jesus, he actually gave a great sermon during Hanukkah, which he observed. And that's when he gave the whole I am the light of the world sermon as they were lighting the menorah. So we will choose, we as a family choose to observe the holy days of God, not the holidays of pagan Rome. So anyway, I guess you can tell me a couple more of those silly jokes.
I know. It says, Governor, the reporter said, many people can't understand from your recent speech just where you stand on the question of air pollution. Good, the governor said. It took my staff a week to write the speech just that way.
I don't even get it.
Okay,
not
so like politicians.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Politicians. I still don't get it because I'm just not that. I don't know. Anyway, give me another one. Hit me.
The guide had been leading the hungry party deeper and deeper into the woods. Finally, he threw up his hands. We are lost, he said. One of the members of the hunting party screamed, lost? You told me you were the best guide in all of Vermont. I am, the guide said, but we're in Canada now.
Excuse me. We actually used to live pretty dang close to Canada up in New Hampshire. It was like 50 miles the bird flies up to the border.
Mm-hmm.
Upstate New Hampshire, which is beautiful country, but I'm glad that we live where we live because I think this is even more beautiful. I like the desert and the mountains and the lakes. Because they have lakes there. You just couldn't see them unless you were like right on top of them because all the trees everywhere. All right, well, I'm going to leave it at that. Poor.
Okay.
Sorry, joking. And I guess we'll just be back on tomorrow. Now, I set these for 11:30 at night, but it's, you know, give or take an hour, basically, because I never know where I'm going to be at. Like tonight, I got overloaded at 133,500 pounds, and I had to go back up the hill to dump off some so I could get legal. You know, so that takes an extra 20 minutes. So I probably would have been on a little bit sooner, but it was, I had to go and do that. So anyway, so that's kind of the way it is with these programs. You can find them all on Zion's Redemption Bookstore page on Facebook. And you can also follow me on Facebook. My name is Mark Wichtenwalter, and that is facebook.com/LAZURUS1977. Also follow me on YouTube by searching God is My Compass or Mark Lichtenwalter, and the name of the page is Messiah Ben Joseph. Anyway, we're going to cut it out at that, and we'll be back on tomorrow with Old Ship Zion. Thank you for reading, Kim.
You're welcome.
I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Okay, bye.